Sometimes life feels out of our control. We get stuck in trauma, old patterns, and change feels out of reach. Sometimes it feels like fate. We want to help you break out of old, unhelpful patterns and become healthier. We're Fate Resilience, taking control of the outcome.
With licensed therapists, Jennifer Oxford,
Taylor Madsen,
Haley Mayer.
Today we're going to talk about disgust. Disgust tells us this is bad for me. And I get really excited on this topic. So this is actually round two of recording this podcast.
The first one we got a little out of hand, which is totally fine. Not in a bad way, but in a way of like, I don't think we're ready to go into those realms yet.
Yeah, so. Got a little too deep.
Yeah.
But I really liked one of the things I hope we start with is Taylor actually to go through the levels. So because that was new to me.
Disgust is a really important emotion, and it's also a potentially dangerous emotion. Disgust, evolutionarily, can keep us safe from things that we might ingest that could be harmful. I remember a time when I can't remember what I was eating, but it was just so gross. I was, I can't do this, not even be polite.
I can remember a time with that. So not to like, it won't be gross, too gross. I remember eating ice cream, and what I've come to the conclusion is that it had gone, I didn't know ice cream could go bad. Like, I think it had sat out for too long at some point. It was at like a friend's house and they had refrozen it. And so I think the melt had gone bad in the ice cream and it seemed fine texture wise, everything, but there was this taste and I was like, oh, I can't do it. Like, I just can't. And then years later, when I'd had spoiled milk before, I was like, that taste just came back. And I was like, that's what it was. And it was like this feeling of like, that's not good for you. It's dangerous. It's not okay. And so like, I think that we have often experienced it, whether it be like we're at a restaurant, the food tastes off or something like that. It's our body warning us and saying something is wrong.
Yeah. And because I didn't eat it, I didn't get food poisoning,
yep.
But mm-hmm. my friend did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it's interesting too, that disgust is emotion that maybe we don't talk about a lot, but it's very much a protective emotion. Mm-hmm. And it was created to protect us physically and emotionally. Mm-hmm. So we talk about the physical disgust of curdled milk, things like that. And then there's the emotional disgust that actually moves us away from things that aren't good for us or aren't safe for us.
Yeah. When disgust is turned towards other people, it becomes that more potentially dangerous emotion. Mm-hmm. Just dipping our toe in this. Disgust turned towards other people can potentially lead towards genocide. There are 10 stages of genocide. The first stage is classification. That's where people are divided into us versus them, essentially. The
racism
second one.
Behavior.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The second one is symbolization. The third is discrimination. The fourth is dehumanization. Essentially, the them is no longer on the same par as us. They're even less than. Then there's organization. There's militias. There's paramilitary groups. There's even special military groups. The sixth is polarization. There's media that is fueling the hatred towards the them. Then there's preparation. There's plans made to separate, to take out, to kill the them. Then there's persecution. There's moving people. There's removing people. There's separation. And ninth, there's extermination. And the 10th stage is denial that it ever happened.
Mm-hmm. Which we're, it's good to know like the extremism of it, just so that you know, like, that comes from an emotion. It's not just like people went crazy and there's no rhyme or reason. It's there's a step to all of this, in the sense of like, we're not saying like the minute you get disgust, you're gonna go into these extreme emotions, but it's saying like, no, you need to be aware, like these things start from basic emotions. Like they don't just start from midair.
And one of the things that I hear when I listen to that list is how we also do that with our own selves and own parts of selves, mm-hmm. right? So we can do it in relationships, absolutely. But I was thinking, as you're listening, as Taylor's going through this list of when we don't like something about ourselves, when we've decided something about us is disgusting, whether it's our body, it might be an addiction we don't like or something like that, we start to remove ourselves and get very polarized in the thought process. We start to shame ourselves. We start to move into persecution of those parts of ourselves. And it creates this very horrific experience that's so damaging. So that was, as you were reading that was one of the things I realized, is when we become disgusted by parts of ourselves rather than what we've talked about with the common humanity and the self-compassion, that we actually experience these horrific movements internally in families and in other things.
The clinical term for that is reaction formation. That's why you see the people that are most homophobic coming out of the closet later in life, like the founders of conversion therapy and so on, is because we're so disgusted with that part of ourself that it turns into hatred, essentially.
And when you look at that, right, and you think, what would we do then if we start to recognize either I feel disgust for something that isn't bad for me? We're not suggesting you go drink the curdled milk. Okay, but
no, again, disgust is an important emotion. We're just saying it can potentially be dangerous. Keep going, Jen. Sorry.
Well, and with every emotion we've talked about, real versus perceived, right? So there's real disgust, meaning it's actually bad for me, and then perceived. The minute something hurts, minute something feels unsafe, we move away. That's a natural response. You're not thinking about it. You're just going to move away. If I get in an argument with somebody, I'm going to physically move away from them. I'm going to stop talking. I'm going to do some of those things. I'm separating, like we talked about. But that doesn't mean that person, that relationship is forever harmful. There are unhealthy relationships. But how do we then move when we've got perceived disgust, and how do we repair is one of the things I'm thinking about.
Well, the thing that keeps coming to mind too is I love the drama triangle. Because I feel like disgust is one of those core emotions, and this will come up with other emotions too, but I think disgust is one of those core emotions that throws us into this drama triangle. So a drama triangle, there are three roles we play when we feel unsafe, and disgust could be one of them. Because in the end, disgust comes from a feeling of unsafety of some sort, right? And so we go from being the persecutor. So we're acting against someone. That's when we're talking about like racist behaviors, or talking about behaviors that are just, even if I'm disgusted by something that my partner does and it's something that's way outside my value system, I might become like, you're an awful person because you did that, right? Persecutor. We go into victim mode when we're disgusted by someone else, because we're looking at it and saying like, you know, I'm disgusted by your behaviors and look what you've done for me, right?
And in victim mode, we do a lot of case building. So this is really important with the emotion of disgust.
Yeah.
Is we have to prove to ourselves, especially if it's a perceived disgust versus a real disgust, or if it's time to repair, we'll stay in that place where we'll rehash.
Yes.
What happened versus being able to move into repair to stay in that emotion. Mm-hmm. And that goes into the us versus them mentality that you talked about in some of those other stages. And so understanding that when we stay in victim, that we prolong something versus curdled milk isn't something I have to like explain to you for 5 years.
Yes.
No, or when we see someone that's sick and, you know, things that come along with being sick, there's a disgust that comes with that because our body is trying to keep us safe from infection.
Yeah.
And there's no rationalization required. You just have to say
validation of like, you're right. That is something that, you know, is something I should be aware of, rather than making it about like, they're trying to hurt me by being sick around me. You know, I think we often do that. But the third part of the drama triangle, which I find really interesting, because for a minute when I was thinking about it, I was like, I don't know if this goes with disgust though, but caretaker, persecutor, totally goes along with disgust, because you see that with, you know, recently in the news, there's been a lot about the past schools that they would have for like Native Americans in the area to get rid of their Native American ways, things like that. That's very much caretaker. Caretakers, let me do this for you. Let me change this for you. Let me teach you your wrong ways.
If you're no longer disgusting, you're not bad for me
anymore. Yes. And then we also see that about people who have been disgusted with partners. They take on that role of, well, then let me eliminate the disgust from you so that way you can then be with me, kind of more, you know, same thing with what we talked about, conversion therapy. Let me, you know, let me change you so that way you're no longer disgusting to me and then you can be part of my circle, right? So the flip though, with what Jen is saying, is how do we step out of that? That really goes with the empowerment dynamic. That is literally the opposite of the drama triangle, right? When we're talking about persecutor, it's about being a challenger. First of all, not just being a challenger to the person who I'm finding that disgust feeling for, but a challenger to myself. Why do I feel that way? What's going on? And then the second part is being, instead of a victim, you're being a creator. And that's what Jen was just saying too, is instead of being a victim and saying it's poor me, you can acknowledge you've been victimized in some way. That's fine. That's not the issue. The issue is dwelling in it. But being a creator, when you come with disgust, is saying, how do I get more curious about this person? How do I get more curious about this situation? How do I change so that way I can be able to be more involved and be more open-minded? And then the third one of, instead of caretaker, you're being a coach. You're being someone who's saying, okay, maybe there are actual legitimate behaviors that are not okay. I'm not saying I'm going to change them, but coaching myself, and then also coaching the person with me and saying, you know what, like, why, what are you doing? Again, about being, you know, curious. How am I going to look into this? How am I going to, like, you know, empower this person to be who they want to be, but also empower myself to notice, like, what are the feelings that are coming up? And so in the end, we can use curiosity for all three of those. I think with disgust, that is like the thing that you can combat it with, is just curiosity. Because we're not saying disgust is bad. We're simply saying you need to understand, why is that my visceral reaction to this thing? And how can I be curious about it and not be against it?
One of the things that's interesting is that when it's time to repair something, you'll get curious. There are things that I will never be curious about. The truly disgusting things in life, that is just not my thing.
But you can be curious, though, about what about this is coming up for me, right? It's not that I need to be curious about the actual issue. You can be curious about, like, what about this is putting on my red light.
So here's an example. So I've had to set some high boundaries in my life with certain people. Mm-hmm. And there have been times in my life where I've realized that I start thinking, is that boundary still appropriate? Do I still need that high of a boundary? Maybe this is a relationship that I want to repair. Maybe there's more value in it. And then that curiosity tells me I'm moving out of disgust. So one of two things happens, is I either replay and say, okay, what happened to get me to this boundary? Oh yeah, nope, that's not safe, you know, and that's going to reaffirm that it wasn't healthy or safe for me, which is what disgust was trying to tell me. Or I move into this place of, you know what, I think I'm in a better place. I probably could handle that relationship, but not in exactly the same way. So what would that look like? And that's when I'm going to go to that idea of coaching. Maybe that means moving into therapy with the relationship or with myself so I can handle the relationship repair. Maybe it means just reframing in my own mind what I think about that person, rather than actually choosing to reengage, just saying, I'm going to stop treating this person like a disgusting person in my head. When their name comes up or where they bring that up, I want to feel calm versus this visceral reaction.
Yeah.
And so those are all options. You don't ever have to re-engage with somebody if you don't want to, but the idea that you start to get curious about what it would be like if you didn't hold that place for that level of disgust with that relationship or that part of yourself creates that. And I think we see that too in families, where we have this us versus them mentality around a certain behavior. And then someone you love, I'm thinking of, you know, if you have really strong religious beliefs around sexuality and someone you love comes out, whether it's a different gender or sexuality, and suddenly you're like, wait, I love this person. This doesn't feel normal to me. And so reorganizing it for yourself to say, how do I hold my values and stay in love with this person?
Yeah.
And you can do that. You don't have to hold to the us versus them mentality.
The most important thing to move out of disgust is empathy and compassion. And disgust is very far away from empathy and compassion because it dehumanizes other people in our eyes. One of the first populations I ever worked with as a therapist was sex offenders, which I would go ahead and say broadly in society is a disgusting population.
Definitely in the villain realm.
Villain realm, yes. And it's important to remember, again, just dipping my toes in this, that empathy is not agreeing with someone. It's not condoning what they've done, but being able to see them as another human, finding that common humanity that you talked about a couple episodes ago, Jen, and Shame Part One, is really important if we're going to move out of disgust and, more importantly, not move into that dangerous place for ourselves or for other people. And regardless of what someone has done, empathy and compassion is always possible.
And again, if you're struggling with that empathy and compassion, finding that coach, doing your therapy, helping yourself move in that direction would be one of the ways you go through it. I'm thinking of situations physically, we've talked about emotionally, that are disgusting, but that I felt a lot of empathy in. And I think about watching someone give birth. There's a lot there in the bodily function realm. And yet it is one of the most beautifully compassionate experiences that I've experienced in my life. And I feel humbled by that idea. And yet in the moment, there was a lot of there could have been a lot of disgust, but I was able to move into empathy and to hold space for what was really going on. And it was a beautiful experience.
I think the same thing can be said about, I have friends who've worked in the geriatric community, and I have other friends who are like, oh, I just can't stand old people. They're so weird and things like that. I know, but I do know some people who like just feel very uncomfortable. And I would even say like some of them borderline the disgust emotion kind of thing. And it's not because they hate the people themselves. They're just like, there's a certain set of things that come along with that, right? A friend of mine, he works in, you know, a geriatric living facility, and it includes things like changing bedpans, taking care of them, sponge baths, things like that. And other friends of mine are like, oh, I could never. But it's the same type of situation. It's the idea of like, but there's so much empathy you come from that. There's so much you can dissect it. But even the more I look at it, also just the emotional journey we go on with people, right? A lot of people, they look at our job as therapists and they go, oh, I can never. Like once you learn those things about people, I could never want to be around them, right? And so if we're looking at it and saying this idea of, I'm going into this coach situation, I'm going into this situation where I am being curious, I'm having empathy for the person. I don't know about you, but like, I know that I was originally like a little worried that if people would bring up problems that were kind of on the borderline edge, like what Taylor's saying about like working with sex offenders, that was one of my first populations too, or working with people who have like really big issues that are kind of shame-based and because of behaviors that are not quote unquote normal. I remember I was a little worried about that too. But when you learn how to get to that just base empathy mode with that person, I haven't yet found anything like, yes, I've had some pretty interesting issues people have brought up, but I haven't yet found it where I've just dwelt in that disgust yet. Because for me, I see that more as the being curious, being a coach mentality, being also a creator in it. Because I think sometimes when someone else is being disgusting, we all of a sudden feel victimized, even if it's not pointed at us, because we have to witness it.
I haven't felt disgust with a client in 6 years. And I think you'll both remember the incident. I got spit in my eye. Other than that.
Was that with the client or with the situation? There you go.
With the situation.
There you go. Yeah.
Things that bond us together.
I think though that like, I don't know. I think that that's good to be aware of too, that that's part of the shame. And that's part of the personification of disgust is it the person or is it what they're doing? What is it? Right. Cause we often say the person is awful, but it's like, actually it's that fact that they spit in your eye. That's the big issue. When you actually know the person, you're like, other than that, they were fine. Usually. Right. They had their issues, but
yeah, I liked the kid a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You just didn't like the spit in your eye?
No, I could have done without.
As we think about this thought and the idea of disgust, one of the things that I think we start with is this idea that when we find disgust in ourselves, we're more likely to find it in other people. So the first place you can look at is, how do I find that self-compassion and empathy with myself, especially if I'm treating other people with disgust? I find that moving with clients through their own work of how do I love the parts of me that I find disgusting is the most freeing work that you can do in your therapy. Mm-hmm. And usually if they have a disgust towards another person that doesn't make sense to them, that they will absolutely learn from self-compassion how to move through that for themselves. Thank you for listening to our podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Please feel free to rate, subscribe, and review. And if you want to find us on social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook at Fate Resilience. We would love to hear from you.